Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 16, Text 46. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Viditam Anantasam Samastam. Viditam Anantasamastam. Tava jagat atmano jana ihar charitam. Tava jagat atmano jana ihar charitam. Tava jagat atmano jana ihar charitam. Vigyapyam parama guru. Vigyapyam parama guru. Kiyariva sabatur iha kadyotai. Kiyariva sabitur iha kadyotai. Okay, someone chant, please. Anyone? Any ladies chant? Viditam, well known. Ananta, O unlimited. Samastam, everything. Tava, to you. Jagat Atmanam, who are the supersoul of all living entities. Janai, by the mass of people, or all living entities. Iha, within this material world. Acharitam, perform. Vigyapyam, to be informed. Paramaguru, Paramaguru, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Master. Kiyat, how much? Iba, certainly. Sabatu, to the sun. Iva, like. Kadyotai, by the fireflies. O unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead, whatever a living entity does in this material world is well known to you because you are the Supersoul. In the presence of the sun, there is nothing to be revealed by the light of a glowworm. Similarly, because you know everything, in your presence there is nothing for me to make known. No purport 47. Namastubhyam bhagavate sakala jagat stiti layo dayae shaya duravasitatma gataye kuyoginam bhidha paramahamsaya. My dear Lord, you are the creator, maintainer, and annihilator of this cosmic manifestation. But persons who are too materialistic and who always see separateness do not have eyes with which to see you. They cannot understand your real position, and therefore they conclude that the cosmic manifestation is independent of your opulence. My Lord, you are the supreme pure, and you are full in all six opulences. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Purport. Atheistic men think that the cosmic manifestation has come about by chance, by a combination of matter, without reference to God. Materialistic so-called chemists and atheistic philosophers always try to avoid even the name of God in relation to the cosmic manifestation. For them, God's creation is impossible to understand because they are too materialistic. The Supreme Personality of God, it is Paramahamsa, or the Supreme Pure, whereas those who are sinful, being very much attached to material sense enjoyment, and therefore engage in material activities like asses, are the lowest of men. All their so-called scientific knowledge is null and void because of their atheistic temperament. Thus, they cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sa Padantikam Vanshakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So these are Chitraketu's prayers. So they're prayers after he has seen the Supreme Lord. He had Sakshat Darshan. He sees the Supreme Lord. So he's come a long way. So it's kind of a template for how we move towards that goal of not only seeing God, but responding to that with devotion. So he starts as attached and distressed, and they're connected. Because if you're attached, you're going to be distressed. Because the only way you're attached and you won't be in distress is if you can control the world according to your attachments, and we can't. So no matter who we are, we're going to be distressed to the extent that we're attached. Sure enough, one way or another, something's going to happen to all of us. Day by day, minute by minute, year by year, lifetime after lifetime, where things don't go our way, and sometimes they radically don't go our way. Sometimes they go completely against our attachments. Generally, we have an illusion of control. We have our house, we have our country, we have our relationships, and then sometimes it goes completely against our attachments. We have to leave our country, or our loved ones are killed, or we lose our reputation, or our health goes. So that's calamity. So it's so that happens, and he suffers. But his suffering becomes yoga. The first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is called Vishad Yoga. Vishad means depression. The yoga of depression. When your misery helps you to join with God. When you have a clear understanding, because we're seeking pleasure, that I can't become happy by changing the world. Because I'm not the controller. I can't become happy by changing the world. I only can become happy by changing my consciousness. And generally, most people come to God this way. I remember my first spiritual realization and where it happened. Between 105th and 108th Street on Seaview Avenue. Sitting in a car with my friend, Jan, the immigration lawyer for the Bhakti Center. We're sitting in a car. This is our first spiritual realization. There has to be something better than this. There has to be something better. So what does he do? He inquires, is there something better than this? He invokes a certain type of humility of looking for some authority, not just position authority, but authority in terms of knowledge and teachings, someone who can give the answers. Of course, he's already within the Vedic culture. It makes it a little bit easier. There's a verse, Dharmasya Yapavargasya, Dharma is meant for liberation. And one Acharya gives a commentary, how is Dharma meant for liberation? Dharma is meant for liberation because when you have Dharma, you respect guests and a Vaishnava may come to your home. That's how Dharma is meant for liberation. A Vaishnava may come to your home. If you're actually... So that's the first thing. And then he inquires from his guru. And because he's in that kind of culture, the same people that organize the sacrifices to satisfy his desires are the same people that can give him the knowledge how to transcend the world. So he follows his guru. His guru gives him a practice. He sincerely follows the practice. And he sees God. And then from that devotion, real devotion comes into his heart. In our tradition, the sadhana sadhya are the same. You just do it in a different way. The sadhana, the practice to get perfection is chanting the holy name. The result of that will be chanting the holy name. But you'll chant the holy name in a different way. One way you'll chant the holy name for perfection. The other way, out of perfection, you'll chant the holy name. I went to a very nice kirtan retreat that Satchinandana Swami invited me to on the island of Ish, which was great, like Ishvara. It was the island of Ish in the Adriatic Sea. I mean, it was spectacular being at that retreat center. Spectacular. I remember after the morning program, me diving into the Adriatic Sea. It's practically right out of the door of the building. And Satchinandana Swami, he asked me to give one seminar. It was his program, so 50 minutes, on Nam Kirtan being the essence of the Bhagavatam. And I actually wrote on this, how it's the essence of the Bhagavatam in every way, from beginning to end, from the first verse to the last verse to every instruction, it's leading to that. And then I went into Krishna's pastimes. And it's the same thing, except they're chanting not to get love, out of love they're chanting. Throughout the Bhagavatam, the mothers of Krishna, they're cooking in the morning and they're just singing songs about Krishna. And when the cowherd boys go out to the forest, they're doing kirtan. And then when they come back from the forest, there's that very beautiful scene where the gopis rush out of their homes. First they hear the flute. I think first they see the padaduli, the dust of Vrindavan. If you're ever in Barsana, one Sadhu Ramesh Baba has a goshal of 30,000 cows. And you can look from Mankutir out to the goshala and you can see that padaduli, the dust of Vrindavan. So Krishna's cows, they see the dust, then they hear the kirtan. And then they see Krishna. So same thing happens here. He sees God. We discuss, I saw you, my contamination is gone. By Guru's mercy, I had your audience. It's true. It's true. Jiva Goswami is analyzing these verses in the Bhagavatam where it describes the progression of how you advance, beginning with Shushrushro Shraddhanasya Vasudeva Katavruchi, by associating with devotees, then Srinvata Swa Kata Krishna Punya. Then you're chanting with them, and then God appears in your heart, being pleased by the community of devotees joining together for his glorification. He enters in the heart for purification. Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. Then you become fixed, your heart becomes cleansed. And it goes on, Tamo Rajas, Tamova. Then Vidyate Vidyagrati. Then the knot in the heart that connects you with this world is broken. So, an interesting comment on that. At that point, there's no more doubts. Because up until that point, there may be a slight doubt. A slight doubt up to that point. And what's that doubt? Two doubts. Is it true? Can I attain it? But now you have audience. It's true. And he's seen. And then what does he do? He just continues his prayers. He continues his prayers. And we're in the section now. So he's continuing his prayers. And we're up to today's verse. I like the verse, the previous verse. It describes, in the presence of the sun, there's nothing to be revealed by the light of a glowworm. And that same analogy is used in Brahma Vimohan Lila. Because Lord Brahma thinks he's so powerful until he sees Krishna's unlimited mystic opulence. Because Krishna duplicates all the cowherd boys, manifests in all the cowherd boys, down to their voice, their accents, their psychological proclivities. So imagine a mystic, right? That you go into the next room and boom, he's created all of you. Down to your psychological proclivities. And all the things we like and hate about everyone. There it is. Boom. And the dress and the, you know. And he sees all this and it just gets the and then he sees around each Vishnu figure all the followers of Vishnu doing kirtan. And then he sees karma, swabhav, guna, everything manifest in each one. And Lord Brahma, when he sees that opulence, he's completely blinded. It's too overpowering for him to contain within his senses. And he collapses. The glory of God is just too powerful because it overpowers all of your senses at once. That's described in a book called Madhurya Kadambini, where it describes when the living entity comes to the spiritual world and he enters the spiritual world and he sees Krishna, And all his eyes, all his senses become eyes. How is that? Prabhupada, did you see him? You heard him? I said Prabhupada, but you see Prabhupada. So all your senses can experience something else. So all the senses we're experiencing, and it's the soul faints. The soul faints. And then he gets up and he hears Krishna's voice. My dear, whatever your name is. And then wakes up again. And then all his senses become ears. You can also see with your hearing. Like, for example, if you have a favorite band and like someone brings in a picture of them, you may immediately like hear a tune. And then wakes up in Krishna's arms. And then the last one, which is really powerful, is all the senses simultaneously see, smell, hear, touch, and see Krishna. And that's called Audarya, unlimited magnanimity. So Lord Brahma was over. He was not prepared. He couldn't contain that prayer. He becomes blinded. And then it describes his foolishness of trying to bewilder Krishna. And it says when a person of inferior power tries to control a person of superior power, his own power becomes diminished, just as a glowworm shining in the night comes before the sun. At the night, wow, look at that. You see that little glowworm? True. So spectacular. And then in the sun, it's nothing. I also like Lord Brahma's prayer when he realizes the expanse of Krishna. After he sees Krishna's opulence, he says, just as hex atoms are coming through a screen. Now, if you have a screen and the sun is coming in and you look to the side, you'll see these little particles, which you can't see unless the sun shines at them. I think they're called hex atoms. They're very, very tiny. So he says, just as hex atoms are coming through a screen, all the universes are pouring through your body. And then he says, so who am I and who are you? So all these prayers, putting this, glorifying God and invoking the humble heart. Sachinandana Swami, I remember I attended a seminar in Govardhan that he gave about prayer. And I don't know if it was a specific type of prayer or it was prayer in general, but he discussed, I think it was a specific type of prayer, but it's generally what prayer does is it accentuates, not increases, but reveals the glory of the object of your devotion. And then it expresses generally your relative insignificance. And this allows you to feel mercy or love. Because if you don't value something and you think you're really great, then you don't appreciate it. There's a sense of entitlement. So what prayer does, it increases the distance between the object of your adoration and your own position to receive it, which increases your feelings of mercy. And mercy is love from above. And that's the essence of the verse, Trinadapi Sanichena, Turorapi Sahishnana, Amanina Madanena Kirtani Isidahari. When you're humble, you can chant always. Why? Because the only thing you can do always is things that you do with devotion. That's the only activity. Because that devotion is the only activity that is pleasurable within itself. karma is not pleasurable within itself. The fruit of karma is pleasurable, not the activity. Jnana is not pleasurable by itself. The goal, moksha, is pleasurable, not the activity. So only devotion is something that you can do always, because only devotion is pleasurable within itself, because devotion is never done for any cause or reason. So when you're humble, you can feel mercy. When you're entitled, when you have ego or pride, you can't feel that love. So the humble person is feeling the mercy of God and appreciates his position and appreciates the Vaishnavas and appreciates the devotees, and then feels it, and he has devotion. He has devotion. And therefore, when he chants, he can chant with devotion for God, who's given and bestowed that mercy upon him. So prayers are very, very powerful. It's one of the 9 practices of devotional service. It's a separate practice. It's also a form of kirtan, because kirtan means when the devotion in the heart is expressed. That's kirtan. And when it's expressed, it enhances your devotion. So prayers are very, very powerful, because they have the ability to communicate the feelings of the people who have written them and expressed those prayers. It's the nature of prayers. It can make you feel that. So a lot of the Bhagavatam are these prayers. And here, the point I really like here, which he's explaining, is how you're so great, but there are certain people that can't understand you because they are too materialistic, and therefore they see bida or separateness. What does that mean? They see separateness. They have separateness. Those who have separateness do not have the eyes to see you. What causes separateness? And what is the separateness? It's not just between you and God. It's between God's creation and God. There's separateness. That's the separateness. Prabhupada called, Maya means illusion. But he said it's sense gratification. Why? Because when you want to enjoy something, you tend to see it as yours. This is called narcissistic. A person, material consciousness, is narcissistic. You see things according to your desires. Don't ever engage in a monetary transition with someone who's narcissistic. Because somehow or other, once they get your money, they'll see it as theirs. I've had this experience. You deal in that type of thing, and all of a sudden the person don't want to give you back the money, and they're convinced it's theirs in the most weird, convoluted logic in the world. Because they're seeing the world according to their own desires. So therefore, due to that, they see that which is yours as separate from them. And that's the basis of the material world. Because we want to enjoy, and enjoyment is not just sensual stimulation, it's this sense of superiority. Because we see, when people have all the money in the world, they generally go into politics. Because they're getting all the sensual stimulation, but what they really want is that feeling, I am better than you. That's why it's so hard for us to admit mistakes, or if someone says we're wrong. This is what the false ego is. The false ego is this sense of superiority that we want. We want that position. So when you have that, you tend to see, to one extent or another, when you have that, you want to feel proprietorship and control. And therefore, that's the root of actual atheism. You want to see God's energy is yours. But how do you do that? You have to be an illusion. You can't see what's there. God is so apparent, but you can't see it. It's too much a crush for your ego that there's something so much greater than yours. This is what I'd say to an atheist. Get over it. There's someone already in charge. There's someone already has that position. It's so apparent. I saw an argument between a theist and an atheist, and I was kind of studying this for a while. This what's called apologetics. It means people who can rationally defend faith. And in terms of the existence of God, there are certain Christian apologetics that are really good. So there was one, there was an argument between this really obnoxious physics professor and this very really fine and just a contrast in behavior. And then the Christian apologetic said, apologist said, what would it do for me to convince you that there's God? He said, if I looked up in the sky one day and it said, the cloud said, I am here. You know, and then the Christian apologist made the argument that it is more probable that that would happen than how the universe was formed. It's so improbable. There's an argument, I think it's called monkey on a typewriter. So if you put a monkey on a typewriter, and it's just banging away, it is more probable that monkey could write spontaneously the collected works of Shakespeare than it is for this universe to have come about by chance. And not only that, if you think about it, if this universe just happened by chance, then every single action that happens, even me giving a class, every word I have that follows after another word logically, exponentially increases the improbability that this is by chance. And it's not only me, but everyone in the world that's speaking logically, everything that moves, every time you start a car and it goes forward, every time you cook something, every single instance exponentially increases the improbability that this world is happening by chance. And it's continually happening. So it's evident. That there's a God is evident, but people can't see it because of that feeling of it's rooted in, I want to control. And I don't want to see this. That there's someone else who is in control of everything, who has the quality of Adrayam Gyan, whose consciousness is pervading everything. I don't want to see this. You know, and just the Ruti once found me this purport. When I first came, I told the story, I got kidnapped. But in the morning, I was reading the Bhagavatam, and then I escaped, and I was recaptured, and there was a sense where I'll be committed to a mental hospital. And it depended on me seeing my parents seeing the psychiatrist and complaining about me, and me seeing the psychiatrist. And it's dependent on what the psychiatrist, Dr. Cohn, said. So he interviews my parents first. And then he interviews me, and the first question he says, are you hallucinating? I said, why? And he said, because I saw you outside talking to yourself. But I was waiting in the lobby as a fanatic Hare Krishna. And then because I didn't have any clothes when I came back, and my parents, I just had all these, I had baggy pants before they were in style, a football jacket that my brother had, you know, from high school. I don't know where my father got this hat from, a Pakistani insurance salesman. And I'm there chanting enthusiastically on my fingers out loud among all these crazy people, and I fit right in. They were talking to the wall. I was chanting in ecstasy, and he thinks I am hallucinating. So he asked me, "Are you hallucinating?" And I quote almost verbatim this purport from Prabhupada. It's somewhere in the fourth canto. I said, "No, I'm not hallucinating, but it can't be said that I'm seeing the same thing as you." I said, "Just like a rose." I said, "A person who is atheistic sees the rose as separate from God and meant for his enjoyment. A person who is theistic sees that rose as God's energy and therefore meant for service." I said, "Therefore, although I'm not hallucinating, it can't be said that I am seeing the same thing as you." And then, this is classic, he went like this. And then he said, "I think your parents are crazy." And then he released me. He released me. But that purport was so powerful by Prabhupada, that our vision is affected by consciousness. And if you see, due to your desire to enjoy, the energy of God separate from God, you won't see what is obvious. And that's God's creation. We have, and I you know me, I'm Vaidhi Bhakti, so I love this. 8 a.m., it ends. No, seriously, people know me. I like things that are on time, end on time. People go to work, they got to wake up the next morning. I like this. Anybody have any reflections? Yes.
Something that I often find myself talking about with friends is about when you come for Krishna and you make a prayer, you need to express things, you know, tell him things, because he already knows everything. Is it an act of devotion to tell him anyway, or is it just an act of, you know, pray to communicate to the service, and he knows anything?
You're asking, I'm timing it, but I know the answer is that God develops needs according to our devotion. So if you actually have love for the deity, and in the winter you put the deity in cold water, the deity will get sick. The deity will starve if you don't feed God. I read, you know, the Bhakti Sundarbha, I can't wait till the BBT prints it, because it's, when they get to it, because it's such a treatise that delineates bhakti. And when it discusses deity worship, it actually explains that. Because what does God want from us? He wants our love. So he actually develops needs according to our devotion. So I think Rabindra Sarup Prabhu made a point too, that God is infinite, his pleasure is infinite, but he's given us the capacity to enhance and increase his pleasure. So there's some type of, and then that also Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that God is Mugdatta and he's Sarvagya. He's all-knowing and he's forgetful at the same time. First of all, he's not all-knowing. Right? If he's not forgetful, then he has to think of Trump all the time, like everyone else in the world. So he's forgetful. He's, at the same time, he's all-knowing. He's also forgetful because rasa is based on surprise. If he's always just all cognizant of everything, how is there rasa? Actually, when the cowherd boys die on the bank of the Jamuna, he thinks they're dead. Krishna actually thinks the cowherd boys are dead, because he wants to experience. Okay, now I'm going to get on the case of the pujaris. I'm finished on time, and it's 8:02. Cool. No, I'm not finished yet. Wait till I'm finished. I'll tell you what we can do. Oh, is that the system now, when I'm finished? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki.